become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back. Lord knows they'll try.
Wow. Well, welcome everyone to the National Intelligence Report here for the 10th day of November in the year of 2023. And let's get some things taken care of here right away. That, yes, that American dream has become a nightmare. And how in the dickens did that happen? But anyway, folks, we have a platform here that supports free speech. And free speech must be supported. If we don't support our rights, people, we don't deserve them. It's really that simple. If you're not willing to step outside of your boundaries to support your rights and the rights of others, you don't deserve rights. It's really that simple. And so if you would please go to republicbroadcasting.org and check on the donate button. I'm sorry. And then also, if that doesn't work for you, call in. They will accept that good old snail mail. And but if you call in, they can help you with debit cards or what have you. So tonight, I am really fortunate because I've got my good old buddy from up there in South Kakalaki, none other than Stephen Douglas Whitener. And Stephen is a host here on RBN as well, and a damn good one. So, Stephen, how you doing tonight, buddy?
Oh, I'm terrific, Mike. Thanks so much for having me. If I was any better, as you say, I'd be illegal in several states.
Oh, well, you know, that does happen. Well, tonight, Stephen, and, you know, I ask you to join me because what I would like to do tonight, and let me, you know, here's another thing I should preempt with, folks, is the fact that Stephen and I have got a really heavy schedule here to try to get out all of the information that we want to get out tonight. So, unfortunately, we're not going to be taking any callers. This is a program to where we're going to try to get as much information out as possible. And I wanted to do was, and Stephen, I'll just hit you with a question here right up front. How long has America been a Marxist, or how long has America been ruled by a Marxist government?
At the very minimum, since the end of our quota, I would even argue since this Constitution was created. I mean, he can't really be Marxist before there was a Marx. But as I said earlier today, I've learned the past 3 years that it was the Articles of Confederation that our nation was, and whatever that was really done away with criminally and treasonously at the convention by those guys.
Well, absolutely, buddy. And the thing of it was, and most people just can't seem to grasp hold of this, probably has something to do with their Marxist indoctrination, but called public schools. And, of course, there's that lobotomy box you can turn on whenever you want to and watch as they play with your mind. But here is the point. I think most people, Stephen, don't have a clue that the Articles of Confederation was the government of the, what can we call them, the Sons of Liberty. It was the government of Patrick Henry. It was the government of Luther Martin. It was not the government of the wealthy aristocracy. And I pointed out earlier that, you know, even though the Federalists, as they named themselves, deceptively, of course, that even though the Federalists, you know, dominated the Congress assembled under the Articles of Confederation, they could not get through their programs because of Article 13, which required every state to agree. Now, the reason Article 13 was put in the Articles of Confederation was because of the Declaration of Independence. And the Declaration of Independence says that all valid governments operate on the consent of the governed. And that is the consent of all of the governed, not a consent of the majority of the governed. And people today have been brainwashed into the point, well, if the majority wants it, then you've got to do it. Well, I'll never forget, substitute teaching many years ago. And I had a class of high school seniors when I was substitute teaching, and we were talking about exactly, you know, the consent of the governed. And I looked around the classroom and I saw that I had, you know, approximately 27 students. And, you know, the majority of them by two or three were male. And so I asked the students in the class, do you believe in democracy? Oh, yes, that's the greatest thing, the greatest government ever. And I said, well, may I make an illustration for you? And they said, yeah, sure, you go ahead. And I said, all right, well, I said, we have three, you know, we've got, I think at the time, I said, I think we've got 15 males in this class and we've got 12 females. Now, what if we put up a vote that all of the men, here's the proposal, that the men could have the women in this class anytime they wanted to, and the vote was 15-12. Would you women be okay with that? And I immediately got up, no! And I said, well, you just said you have no problem with a democracy. Democracy means a majority rule. And under a democracy, if the majority deem it necessary, you have no rights. You may not even have the right to live. But yet, even today, Stephen, as we watch, Fox News and CNN and all these other things, they talk about our wonderful democracy. What are your thoughts on that, buddy?
You mentioned how if we don't support our rights, exercise our rights, then, you know, they go away. They don't really exist unless you exercise them, even if you supposedly think you have them. And it would atrophy just like a muscle that's not used. People act exercising their rights and rightful liberty together creates a society that would, and if you stop doing that, then, you know, it falls apart, I guess. That was the thought I'd had a lot while you were going through that. And the Articles of Confederation were, like you said, they were not of the upper class the way the other was. It just, these people, they all had to agree, and you told, you know, it just, I think that what was started there, they came and tried to finish the job in the Civil War, too. That basic independent kind of confederation of equal states, that didn't even exist then. There's no way that democracy – okay, one other thing I thought was that illustrates it even better than the three wolves and a sheep voting for what's for dinner, too, to people. You know, that they could feel that when come home more in the classroom of kids, too. I thought about that as you told that story, sir.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, we're looking at this, and it's been my contention, and, you know, and I sell it for what it's worth, but it's been my contention that the Constitutional Convention of 1787, the wealthy aristocracy, there were no common people represented at that convention. Zero. Absolutely no one of what we would call common day Americans was present at that convention. So that convention designed a government which they would run. And they did. They ran the government because the majority of the people in the first Congress were people who were at the convention who wrote the Constitution. So wouldn't it be great, Stephen, if we could write our own rules and then be in charge of them?
Yes, sir. It's like the Fox Garden Hen House. And once they did away with all of the states having to agree, then the more popular and powerful ones are definitely going to dominate then. You know, it's not going to be a confederation of equals, but one that's imposing its will on the many, the few imposing their will on the many.
Well, exactly true, and no one saw that better at the Constitutional Convention than did Luther Martin, because Luther Martin made the observation, if we do these representatives by population, if we take this course, which everyone thinks is, you know, better than sliced bread, if we do this, are we aware that only 4 states out of 13 could control everything? And he named them at the time. He said, if we do this population thing, he said, we cannot take away what the Articles of Confederation provides, and that is one state, one vote, regardless of the population. And he tried to drive that home. He was ridiculed. He was yelled at. He was interrupted consistently over and over on that day when he was making that argument against, representation by population. And today, you know, people think, oh, isn't that grand, you know, representation by population. But back then he said that only 4 states could control the union. Folks, today, instead of 13 states or colonies, we have 50, 57 if you believe Obama. But we have 50 states, and those 50 states could be controlled by 5 with population. Your thoughts, Stephen?
And the cities, I mean, the big cities will still have all the power. You mentioned how when this was coming about that the rural population wasn't represented even in the Articles of Confederation pretty much. By the time this happened, people had gotten so far away from the crown and that power that they were able to take care of themselves pretty much and had really no want of government. You know, it was more the government imposing itself on these people than them trying to break free of it. Is that accurate? I mean, they had a mind of their own over here, and especially since that war that they had back in the 1740s, the French and Indian thing, and that 7 years of war, depending on where you are.
Right. Well, Stephen, I have gone back and I have looked at the American colonies, looked at charters, looked at different things all the way back to the 1600s. Hmm. And the one thing that the people were always fighting, even back then, was the king's government. It's always the people aren't allowed to prosper because of government. The people aren't allowed to do this because of government. And, you know, people say today, well, if we didn't have government, we'd have rampant crime. We have. Have you been to an inner city lately?
Hey, government is the biggest criminal of all, too. And the way these people ended up over here, generally, most of them were they couldn't get along with that government to start with. They were cast aside. They were outcasts and renegades to start with to come over to this. What did they call it? Pioneers. That's it. This is the new frontier. And so after so long a time, it was the redcoats coming to play catch up, I guess, after the empires had settled things between themselves over a couple of hundred years.
Well, there are people today, Stephen, who would tell us, and I've heard it, and I know you've heard it over and over. Well, why are you concerning yourself about this old history? It doesn't matter anyway. You know, why are we even concerned about it? Let's look at the problems we have today. Let's figure out a way to solve these problems. And they do not realize that if you go back in history and look, the same problems were there in 1630, 1640 that are here now. Now they're in a much larger scale because the government is much larger. But if you go back to then and you look at people, and, you know, Rhode Island has really caught my fancy lately, because I was trying to figure out, you know, looking at Rhode Island, Rhode Island wouldn't send delegates to the Constitutional Convention. They voted down the Constitution the first time it went to a ratification convention. Then they decided they would put it the Constitution to a popular vote, and the Constitution was voted down 11-1. And then they said, look, we don't want anything to do with your government. Just leave us alone. Let us be our own people. We're not interested in what you're doing. Then they were forced and coerced to join the union as the, you know, the last one of the 13. They were coerced and forced to join the union because the new government told the state of Rhode Island, well, if you do not join the union, we will move in and shut down all of your ports, and you will not be able to ship or receive. Now, you're way out of that. That's coercion, Stephen. I don't know how else you could call it. Do you?
No, that's tyranny. We're going to lock you, put you in a lockdown. You know, that's a blockade, basically, to shut the ports down. That's an act of war is what I've always heard.
Yes, it absolutely was. And, of course, you know, my thought was, what in the world? I mean, you want to talk about the colonial period, and you want to talk about people with a passion for liberty. You know, you've got to study Rhode Island. And, of course, a lot of people are unaware. Of course, you're not taught about it in school. But Rhode Island actually at one time was part of Massachusetts. And the Massachusetts had a deal where not only were you forced to attend church, and the only church you could attend was the the British church, the Church of England, and plus tithing was mandatory. You had no choice, so everyone had to go to church, everyone had to tithe. And so a couple of gentlemen named Gorton and Roger Williams and a lady named Ann Hutchinson in Rhode Island said, look, this is not right. This is not freedom. This is not liberty. We must have freedom of religion. We must have freedom of everything if we are to be a free people. And not only that, but ironically, it was Gorton and Roger Williams who, when the king gave a charter for new lands in the colonies, it was Gorton and Williams who said, wait a minute, these lands do not belong to the king. How can he write a charter and give them away? There are people living on these lands, have been living on these lands long before we ever got here. They're called Indians, but they were here. It was their property. And Gorton and Williams said, look, the only way, when they moved into Providence Plantations to get away from the tyranny of the Massachusetts government, when they moved in there, their idea was, okay, so the first thing they did is they went to the indigenous people and said, okay, we want to buy this property. And they paid for it. And they bought it from the Indians who were on it. And then they said, okay, we're going to have freedom of religion. You can practice whatever religion you want to. You do not, you know, the government can't force you to go to church, and the government can't force you to tithe to the Church of England. And so that was the establishment of the state of Rhode Island, or the colony of Rhode Island at that time. And Stephen, were you ever taught this?
That they had paid for it? No. I had heard the story about the trinkets with the Manhattan before in public school, but I don't remember them telling me about this. They actually bought the land, paid for it, people that were there. These people, like you said, the king, the monarchy, they were giving all this land away. Ohio, you know, he induced a lot of the generals with promises of that and all that speculation. It was the, you know, the Enron of its day, I guess you'd say, that that's where all of the money laundering and the Ukraine money laundering was going on, and all that same thing, you know, the same thing kind of was going on that's going on today. Government is corrupt and makes war on people.
Stephen, here's a question I've asked from a lot of people, and I really want to hear your response on this. Can there be a government created which the wealthy and the well-born will not eventually take over and control?
I don't think so, not as long as that's the way things are, you know, divided in money, you know, if that's the way it comes down to it. I said this earlier, that there's no way that a fair market can exist in some place where usury, debt created fiat currency is used, and that's a monopoly. Someone has a monopoly on that. There is no free market there to exploit. Eventually, it's going to do just as what you said. It's going to be bought.
Well, it's amazing to me, Stephen, when I look at this and I look at the Constitution and how everybody just gets all orgasmic over the Constitution. Oh, how wonderful it is. It's inspired, you know, inspired by God. You know, it's so wonderful. But yet they fail to address the fact that the first power given to Congress was the power of unlimited taxation for unlimited reasons. For whatever they wanted, they could tax the people to pay for, you know, whatever they, anything they came up with, they could tax the people, and it was in the Constitution. And then, of course, you had the Necessary and Proper Clause, which Patrick Henry said would be the window through which all manners of evil shall pass. And the good old wonderful James Madison, in a great argument with Thomas Tudor Tucker in the first Congress, when Thomas Tudor Tucker wanted to add the word expressly in front of delegated into the 10th Amendment, and James Madison very openly said, no government can be held to its expressly delegated powers. All governments must have the power of, you know, they can do whatever they want to when they want to, because they said it was necessary and proper. The power of implication. Now, and then they came up with the Supremacy Clause, and today people still can't figure that out. I mean, if you look at the Constitution, Article 6, Paragraph 2 of the Constitution simply says that the federal government is supreme over anything. Treaties, laws of the states, everything, the federal government is supreme. And, you know, of course, we've seen that this year with the Second Amendment Preservation Act from Missouri. Where the federal government, then the appeals court, and now the Supreme Court has told Missouri, sorry, the Supremacy Clause overrules the Second Amendment. And what is it, Stephen, that people can't grasp here? What is it?
Well, they all have the ultimate arbitration power, those judges and government, and this Constitution that you think protects you, protects them. It's like that's interesting about the treaty thing too, because have we declared war lately? You know, they just go to the UN treaty to send the troops. They could use that, any treaty, for anything they wanted, and use it as an excuse to supersede what is supposedly limiting their power. But since they're all powerful, here they're coming for you.
Well, let's go back to Harry Truman. Let's go back to Harry Truman in Korea. Very valid point there, Stephen. Let's look at that. And when it came time to send troops to Korea, Harry Truman was challenged by a member of Congress and said, look, there has been no war declared here, Mr. President. And Truman said, well, you know, the Constitution does not give me the authority to send troops to Korea, but the United Nations does. So, in effect, with that simple statement, in 1950, Harry Truman said that the Constitution, regardless of whatever you want to say it is, it's overruled by the, that wonderful United Nations thing. Your thoughts?
I'm curious what the excuse they used in the 20s, or was it the 20s, when we had our troops, you know, Smedley Butler wrote about some of it in Wars of Racket, how he'd been hopping around fighting for United Fruit in different Central American countries, Nicaragua in particular. I forgot the year that, but there was no war declared there, but they sent our troops. I don't recall exactly how that was justified, but I don't remember there being a war declared then either. So it's always just what they want to do. They have the monopoly on the power force and on, like you said, taxation and on drafting you and sending you to execute that force on some foreign person that, you know, it's going to, grandkids are going to come and extract vengeance on yours. For what? Not for any interest of yours. You know, nothing that's going to benefit you. It just, it's infuriated since I was a kid, you know, since I learned how this thing happened, what happened to my dad during the war, what happened to you guys in Nam, you know, it's been something that just has bugged me my whole life. And I don't understand it. And I'm kind of bewildered as to how to stop it. Like you were, what's wrong with people? Why can't they see this? And I feel the same way. It's just heart-wrenching to see people that are all think that they're the good guys when they're just blowing their signature, basically their money is being used to pay for these bombs that we're blowing these people apart with. For what? Well, you know, how is that protect? No, it just, it's an insane system. It doesn't make sense. You know, I don't like it. I'm against it, as Frederick says.
Oh, I'm against it. Yeah, good old Blackbird 9. Well, you reminded me there. Let me throw some things out here before I forget them, Stephen. Tomorrow on the Rebel Madman program, it will be good old Blackbird 9 and myself for the first 2 hours of my three-hour show. And we will be talking about Veterans Day. It was once Armistice Day. Why did it change? And we're going to be talking about World War One and the lies that we were told to bring Americans into that war. And then the third hour, and this is something I hope to make work, Frederick has the program after my Rebel Madman and his Breakfast Club. And so he was worried about Frederick fatigue. So, and it's valid. It's very valid, you know, to do 3 hours and then jump in and do, you know, another show. So here is the project or the idea we're going to try, Stephen, and I'd like your input on this. Frederick and I are going to do the first 2 hours. We're going to touch on, you know, the inside information on World War One, how we were tricked into doing that, how we were manipulated into doing it, and what it did to our own country. And then the third hour, I'm going to turn synopsis and analysis of what Frederick and I did in the first 2 hours over to DW and Cal.
Oh, that'd be terrific. Yes, sir. Yeah.
And they're going to parse it. They're going to take apart what we've said, and they're going to discuss it. And I thought that would be a perfect way to allow Frederick to drop off at the end of the second call and to get prepared for his Breakfast Club, which will come on immediately after the Rebel Madman. So I'm glad you like the concept there, Stephen. What you know, any other thoughts on it?
Yeah, I'd love to hear DW and Cal panel. Yeah, they're ahead of me in class, I put it that way. I've learned more from you the last 2 years than I did the whole time before about what actually happened in history. And I think there's quite a few years ahead of me. I always enjoy learning from them, too.
Well, here's you know, another thing, too. Let me throw this one in there. Our good friend, Murr Bailey, she has a program here on RBN on Sundays. And Murr has been fighting that battle and talking about the USS Liberty. Oh, we've got the break coming up. We'll be back on the other side, folks. Thank you.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Do you truly want to stay out of the system? Are you prepared to buy into the biggest scam since the Iraqi dinar? If not, then put your money where it belongs, in your possession, not in the hands of an international MLM cartel. At Kettle Moraine Limited, we will provide you with the finest Swiss-minted detachable gram sheets of pure 24-karat gold for hundreds of dollars less than the so-called privately issued credit cards with elusive gold backing. Gold backing? The only gold that I want is in my back pocket, not backed by promises of an operation even the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is suspect of, giving a rating of C-. To get the full story, visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com and go to the Valcombe Bullion Vault. Once you have read the whole story about the scam being perpetrated on an unsuspecting public and how you can avoid being a victim by purchasing these beautiful, barterable, tradable sheets of gold at tremendous savings and in the strictest of privacy, be prepared to take the steps to protect your wealth with the purchase of the real deal. Detachable 50-gram gold bars from Kettle Moraine Limited by calling 602-799-8214. Ask about our 1-ounce Valcombe detachable bars, which break into 1/10-ounce bars. And don't forget, for all of your precious metal needs, whether buying or having the need to sell, call Kettle Moraine Limited. Remember, no dinar, no celery, and no carrots. If you buy from someone else, tell them you want AU, not BS. Call Kettle Moraine LTD today at 602-799-8214. Kettle Moraine LTD, 602-799-8214.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung K, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Tennessee Ernie Ford, 16 tons, that good old Southern boy. I tell you what, I grew up laughing, you know, almost without stop when he would be on the, you know, the Lucy show, Lucy and Desi. You know, I love Lucy. When he would be on that program, you know, I'll never forget when he asked Lucy one time. He was a cousin, I guess, from somewhere. And he asked Lucy, he said, could you show me to the bathroom? And she said, go right down the hall there. Be the second door on your right. And he looked at her and said, you mean it's in the house?
I've been in the outhouse before. Yes, sir. There you go. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that, I'll never forget that one. And man, what a voice that man had. He was just absolutely something else. But jumping back to our subject, Stephen, and, you know, most Americans, you know, don't want to believe for a moment that they've been deceived for 235 years, that this country has operated under mass deception for 235 years. And, you know, I've asked people, you know, I'm kind of working on a Substack article right now about when the Constitution betrayed the people. Well, let's look at that a little bit, Stephen, and maybe you'll give me some ideas here. But one of the things I was thinking, the first thing they did to betray the people was to put slavery into the Constitution. What's your thoughts?
Yes, they wanted to mention the Declaration, and that was excluded from that, too. That, yeah, I agree with you.
So I don't understand, and Luther Martin hit this one, I mean, with a sledgehammer about slavery. I mean, here was, you know, Luther Martin from Maryland, and I mean, he went after them about slavery. And he said, how can you even consider doing this? And, you know, we also know when it comes to the slavery issue that the Quakers sent a paper through Benjamin Franklin and asked him to please read it at the convention to not include slavery. Of course, slavery was not included in the Articles of Confederation, folks. Slavery was added to the new Constitution. I mean, if you want to talk about strike one, that's got to be it. But anyway, here the Quakers said, Mr. Franklin, please do not include slavery into the Constitution. A country cannot survive with that. And ironically, Franklin didn't read that letter at the convention. There is no record whatsoever that he ever read that letter, although there is documented evidence that he had it and that it was sent through Tench Cox to Franklin. I mean, it's documented. He had the letter, but he wouldn't read it. Now, you have to ask yourself, why wouldn't he read that? And then number two is he did read a letter. But the red letter he chose to read was the letter from Jonas Phillips from the synagogue of Philadelphia, requesting that in the new Constitution that there be no oath to the Christian faith because that eliminated Jews from service in the government. Now, Franklin read that one, but he didn't read the slavery. Let's do away with slavery issue. Stephen, what do you read into that?
So, somebody probably greased his palm to do that, I would think. You know, they revere Ben Franklin a lot in the public indoctrination centers there, and always coming up. But the more that I learn about him, and Hellfire Club, and all this and other things about him, I'm not so sure he was such a, you know.
Well, Stephen,
hey, yes, sir.
Who was making all of the money on the slave trade shipping?
That would be that's who paid him to say that. The synagogues.
The majority of shippers, and there is a 4-volume set,
yes,
that has been done that is just absolutely fantastic, that proves that the majority of people involved in the slave trade out of Boston, New York, and primarily Rhode Island, that these shippers, Newport, Providence, you know, these other Boston, New York, that these shippers were primarily all Jewish. So, to me, that means something at the convention where you refuse to read a letter from a religious sect asking to do away with slavery, but yet you read the letter asking for Jews to be able to serve in the government when they are the primary sources or the people who are making the most money on the slave trade.
Yeah.
You remember back when Coach told you that in high school, right?
No. And then not only did they codify the slavery into the Constitution, but when ostensibly they emancipated them in the Civil War, they just enslaved us all. You know, that just turned us all into fiscal slaves. And now it's come to the point where we're in this open air digital prison too. It's like, is there anything left that's ours?
Well, Stephen, here's a question I've always wondered, and I've done some research, and I really can't find an answer that makes a lot of sense. But the founders, as we call them, the Federalists, they put slavery into the Constitution for 20 years. So that would mean that the government takes effect in 1798. So then we go to 1808, and then 1818, Where was the effort by the government to stop slavery at the end of those 20 years, Stephen?
I don't recall one. I never heard about it. Seems like there was a bank that expired that led to a big conflagration a few years before that, but I don't remember.
We had the first U.S. bank that fell apart, and we ended up with a war over that in 1812. But then the slavery issue goes away and is forgotten. I mean, it was only authorized for 20 years. So after 20 years, Stephen, was slavery illegal in the United States?
It's a good question. Was it? Well, I mean, it just...
Well, it should have been. With their including it. Yeah. Go ahead, sir. I'm sorry.
Had all that Dred, you know, the Dred Scott decision and everything. It was recognized by the legal system still. It should not have been. I agree. I mean, if it was 20 years, so since when have they ever followed their rules, you know, this is.
Well, I think in essence, what the Federalists told us in 1787 in Philadelphia is we're making the rules and we will decide if we want to follow them or not.
Yeah, that sounds about right. You will own nothing and you will be happy as its final end point, end game. So for the whole planet, it wasn't good back then. I mean, people want to go back to this thing, man. We're not going to fix this with more of this. We have to do different.
Yep. The one thing I think people don't understand, and you said it very succinctly, you can't fix something with more of what broke it.
Yes, sir. they are all in, today. When I was picking up dinner before, and at the local radio station on, and they're all into politics and yet because of the Trump and yet, like, oh man, it they are all sold on political solution that if we don't get a Republican, never like, man, they just are fighting over the puppets when they have no influence over the puppet master. They don't get to vote for the puppet master. They can't outspend the puppet master. There's nothing in that whole charade for them. I sent a little text to the local TV station, said, your vote is, always has been, a charade. Cast the last vote for yourself, you know? That it's just, yeah, you can't, and that you can't vote for the puppet masters, just the puppets.
Well, here's the essence of the vote, Stephen. If I go in and I vote, what I'm saying is that I hope the government will exercise my beliefs over you.
Exactly.
Now, how in the world can that ever be moral?
For the few to try and control the many, never is. I do not believe it is. And, you know, I used to have this, and I would love, in my heart, I would love to believe that if we all practiced that NAP, you know, that non-aggression principle on each other, then everything could work out. There are always those that are going to come and try to impose their will on us. At that point, then, okay, we have a network of sovereign individuals that defend themselves together, maybe, but we don't need to govern ourselves otherwise as a group. You know, govern your own self, okay? It took me a long time to finally grow up to 63 years to grow up to that point of view, but that's just how I feel today, sir. I'm sorry.
No, you don't need to apologize for that because you're spot on. But here's another question I've posed to people, and they have a real problem trying to answer this one, is if, Stephen, if I told you, okay, here, I want you to write a new constitution, and I want you to put into that constitution the provisions that will prevent that government created by that constitution from ever being taken over by the wealthy aristocracy. How would you do it?
Term limits for one. Oh, I know. Listen, you don't vote for the people when they serve, but you vote when they check out. When they finish their term, whether they served their purpose or not, and they have the collar of service that comes with it. I read this in a story once, and if the people vote that, oh, they didn't represent them, then that little collar blows their head off. That would probably work, but, you know.
Other than that, yeah, I forgot the name of that story, but that, you know, holding them accountable some way is the only way. And that was got, like, I think maybe the point with that was the Tree of Liberty every so often has to get watered. And I don't want to live like that either. You know, I prefer non-aggression myself, but there's always somebody coming for you. They won't leave us alone, it seems like.
Well, Stephen, I've often wondered, if we didn't have the wealthy aristocracy, if we didn't have these people, you know, and here's a point. This week, you know, surprisingly for me, I think it was Tuesday night, I get a phone call. I was up in Zebulon on Tuesday night. So it must have been Wednesday night. I get a phone call from a guy I've known for, you know, since 2017. He's a state senator in Arkansas. I'm not going to name him because I don't want to put him on the spot, but I have asked him to come on my show, and he said he would. To talk about these subjects, but I'm not going to give away his name. I don't want to cause him any problems right now. But he is saying that the government in Arkansas has been controlled by the Republicans since 2016. They've even had super majorities where the Democrats couldn't pass anything. Plus, they have all of their the governor is Republican, the Secretary of State is a Republican, the Attorney General is a Republican. They are dominated by Republicans. But yet, since 2016, the taxes have been raised in Arkansas higher than any of the other states in their area. And I was talking to the senator about that, and he said, oh, man, he said, I tell you what. He said, we've got a mess here right now. He said, I first came into office, I think he was with the House of Representatives in Arkansas back in 2002, was the first time he ran. And he said, we are much worse now in Arkansas under complete Republican dominance than we ever were under Clinton's Democrats. That's a mouthful, buddy.
Yeah, it is. They are not your servant, kind of. It's just so obvious. It makes things worse. Who would build the roads? Okay, right. Okay, just, I've had it with them. The corruption is so deep. No one is held accountable, starting at the top especially, but even more and more so. I've noticed a lot more local corruption too the last 20 something years, especially. It just completely rotten.
Well, you know, the other thing that was, he pointed it out to me, and when he said this, when he told me on the, he said, look, he said, our new governor, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, is somewhere to the left of Karl Marx. He said, I promise you that. And I said, but Senator, she's a Republican. He said, I don't care. You can call her whatever you want to. She's somewhere to the left of Karl Marx, with these programs she's coming up with one after another. And because she's a good Republican, the majority of people in Arkansas support her. See, this is how they've used this PSYOP to get people to be totally affiliated, not to freedom, not to liberty, but to their political party. So if their party says, look, we're going Karl Marx on you here, okay, fine, as long as it's not those darn Democrats.
Yeah, you were talking about how they had passed this community service to graduate.
Yes.
And who's going to be in charge of that money? I mean, it's just more and more domination of your life, everything you do, all of your assets. You know, just, they will not leave us alone. I mean, just, I don't know. We have to find a way to turn away from these people. I mean, the public indoctrination centers, if you're sending your kids there, they are being poisoned. And just,
but Stephen, one of the other things that really troubled me, and the good senator sent it to me, he sent me proof of it because I was just flabbergasted when he told me. Now, here, people, listen to this. the Republican Party of the state of Arkansas. If you want to run for office as a Republican, you have to submit a filing fee to the Republican Party to run for office. The fee for running for president in Arkansas is $25,000. That's if you're going to run as a Republican, that's what you have to pay the Republican Party in Arkansas. Stephen, they just increased the fee to run for the House of Representatives in Arkansas. How much do you think that is?
$37,000. I don't know. I just guess.
Well, you're $7,000 too much, but even at $30,000, stop and think about this, people. How many people out there have a spare $30,000 that they can go in for a filing fee just to run for that office, and then you have all of the expenses of the campaign coming up? What the state of Arkansas has done is to ensure that no common person in Arkansas can run for office.
Ever again.
Exactly. Ever. I
mean, yeah. There is no consent of the governed then, okay?
No.
Unless you put it out. There is none. Unless I am asked directly, then there is none. You know, I didn't appoint anybody to represent me, okay? I governed myself here. Unless you asked me, I do not consent.
Well, see, this is the thing, you know, especially when we go back to the Articles of Confederation, as we were talking about before. And the Articles of Confederation provide that consent of the governed. They truly do. Because, you know, one state, and this happened on multiple occasions, this is why the Federalists had to get away from that Articles of Confederation, because twice they brought up their taxing schemes, even when they controlled the Congress under the Articles of Confederation. They brought up these taxing schemes, and they sent out, oh, we need to tax the people for this, we need to tax the people for that, we need to tax all of these people. And so they came up with these, and they sent them out to the 13 states for ratification. Well, in one instance, only one state, and guess who? Rhode Island said, nope, ain't going along with it. So it didn't pass. People, that is consent of the governed, consent of all of the governed. And this is an idea, Stephen, I don't think Americans can get through their heads. Is the government should not be able to tell a free man what he can do with his own property.
And rule by the majority's tyranny, too, as you pointed out.
Yes, many times over, it is a rule of tyranny. And, you know, as a matter of fact, who was it? I'm trying to think of the gentleman who wrote the book, and chapter 14 was Tyranny of the Majority. I think it was de Tocqueville. Yeah, I think that was true. I think it was de Tocqueville who wrote that, The Tyranny of the Majority. Folks, I may be wrong, but I think I'm correct on that one. But anyway, it's really simple. And like you said before, and this is something I think most people have never thought of. You know, I've lived in a multitude of states in this country. West, east, north, south. I've lived in quite a few places. And here's the thing that I think when I think about this so many times is the fact that under the Articles of Confederation, one state, one vote, regardless of the Constitution, I mean, regardless of the population, sorry, you have that. So one state can say no. And folks, we don't think about this. And one of the things I'll always remember is everybody remembers probably 2010, 2012, the wonderful deal over Obamacare. You know, we've got to have Obamacare. And yet, how many people know that at the time this went to the Supreme Court, there were 37 states who had passed legislation to do away with Obamacare. 37 had said, no, we're not going to have that in our state. We're not going to have it. We're not going to implement it. And so the Supreme Court jumps in, and all of a sudden, Justice John Roberts, Chief Justice, that wonderful conservative, sides with the and says that it is a tax when the legislation itself said it was not a tax. And the thing that amazed me is Republicans just keep right on going. Oh, yes. Well, you know, gosh, our, you know, he messed up. So what? They all don't do that. Yes, they do. They're going to do exactly what they're told. Thoughts, Stephen?
It was so much more. It was like a complete takeover of the economy on a lot of levels. Any transaction over $600, they were going to track and stuff. It's, it was like, what did Nancy Pelosi say about it? We have to pass it to find out what's in it.
Yes. I mean,
was it Franklin that said the same thing about the Constitution? We got to get this thing through, y'all. You know,
yes. It's like
very important.
Yeah, so we can find out what we got. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, it's infuriating to see that they have that much control over every aspect of our lives.
And the crazy thing about it is Franklin lied out his ass when he said, we have a republic if you can keep it. And yet today there are people who will still spout that over and over and over again. No, this is a republic. This is a constitutional republic. Well, here is, you know, I've asked this question many times, and people say, well, it's not the government. The government's just fine. It's the people we elect that get there. Well, stop electing them. But, it's just amazing, Stephen, when I stop and look at it and I think about it. It's incredible that the people will continue to accept this over and over and over again as long as they think they have the possibility of voting in someone they like.
Yeah, just so that that person can impose their views on other people.
Absolutely.
That's just wrong. It is not it's morally wrong. I think that's morally wrong as the same way that it's morally wrong that these people will exonerate themselves for
There we are. All right, folks, we'll see you on the other side. Thank you.
One of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs. For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.